Great. Hello, my name is Suphasini Sirapun, and I'm a student project manager at the Clark Forum for the Contemporary Issues at Dickinson College. Today, I'm joined by Manu Meal, the CEO of Bridge USA, who is visiting Dickinson to give a lecture on the new divide, the possibility for dialogue. So I've had the honor of working on this program, and I'm really excited that he's joining me today to discuss his work. So welcome. To begin, for those who are unfamiliar with Bridge USA, could you tell us about what the organization does?
Yeah, so thanks for having me, Supa, and thanks to everybody for listening. I'm sure Dickinson's not always rainy and cloudy, and so it's good to be here on a rainy and cloudy day, but I'm looking forward to meeting everybody. So I'll tell you what Bridge USA is in a quick second. I want to reference actually the conversation you and I were just having, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Supa a question, which was, if you took 10 Dickinson College students, how many of them would you say agree with the idea of having conversations with people that you disagree with, that dialogue is a good thing? And I think you said, you know, like, let's say 8 would say yes,
yeah,
and 2 might say no. I think essentially Bridge USA's job is to elevate the 8 students, the majority of people, the majority of faculty, the majority of administrators, to be able to have dialogues across lines of difference, to empower them to be able to have these conversations. We're a student-led, youth-led organization, the largest organization in the country bridging divides on campuses. We have 75 chapters, 45 high school chapters. And the goal ultimately is, I think that young people have a deep desire to be able to solve our most complex problems. But if we don't give them the ability to actually have conversations with people they disagree with, I think we're in a very difficult spot. And ultimately, we can't let the 2 students dominate and be the loudest voices, because at this moment in American history, I think what we most need is to be able to listen to people, because I think that that's the backbone of what a democracy is.
Right. So let's take it way back. So I understand,
sure,
that you formed Bridge Cal, right,
mm-hmm,
after witnessing the protests at Berkeley in 2017. So if you're comfortable with that, could you take us back to that time and kind of describe what you were seeing, that you were like, okay, you want to create a space for people to have,
mm-hmm,
constructive dialogue?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually started off as a pre-med student. I had no interest in like politics, democracy, any of this stuff. You know, my mom is still confused. She's like, what's going on with this guy? So February 2nd, 2017, which is my freshman year at Berkeley, as you mentioned, we had a speaker by the name of Milo Yiannopoulos come to campus. Now, I remember I was walking back from my math seminar, right? And I hear protests in the distance, helicopters flying overhead. Now, this is Berkeley, so that's kind of like par for the course. That's our thing, right? We protest, we get active, we get engaged. But this was a little bit different, Supa, because I was walking past a cafe. Cafe, the window was broken, and inside it said, CNN, UC Berkeley students protest free speech. And when I saw that headline, what was crazy about that moment was that the television crew that was filming that was standing right next to me. And that was sort of the breaking of the fourth wall. And what happened quickly was, as I went to campus and I saw all this carnage and I saw challenges and I saw problems on our campus because of the speaker, the next day, me and some random people, we got together, who are now some of my best friends, and we said, let's just have a conversation on campus. And we called it Bridge Cal, turned into Bridge Berkeley. And the idea was, imagine how crazy of an idea this is, that you created a space on campus where students from different viewpoints at that protest could just be able to listen and hear each other. And that, over time, grew into an organization called Bridge USA. And over time, it scaled across the country with one goal, which is, I think that people in your generation, my generation, I guess we're the same generation, believe in the need for conversation at this time.
Right. So as you mentioned, you've grown extremely. I think last time I checked was like last week, you're at 63 chapters in high schools and colleges across 39 states. So why is it so important that we start with the youth and the younger people when trying to enact change in our political world right now?
Yeah, so we're actually at 63 college and 35 high school. And what's fascinating about that, I'll tell you why that distinction matters, is that we're seeing young people right now be exposed to information like they've never been before. My brother's in 10th grade. That guy is more informed about political race and presidential campaigns through TikTok than I ever was in 10th grade. What I mean by that is, as people get more and more informed more and more quickly, we have to act much faster to be able to give young people the chance to be able to have these conversations, for 2 reasons. The first is that I think our generation is going to inevitably inherit this American experiment. And if we don't have the capacity to listen to each other, to hear each other, then we're in a very difficult spot as it relates to this country. The second thing is that by 2045, the United States is going to be the most diverse democracy in the history of democracies, in the history of countries. There will never have been a country, Supa, this diverse, this different. And I think most people in our generation think, wow, that's a great thing. The challenge is historically, no country's been ever been able to pull that off. We're a country with 330 million people, heavily armed, with very different ideas, different concepts, trying to make this work. That's amazing. That's ambitious. And we have to figure out how to get our generation to believe in the notion of dialogue, not so for some kumbaya feel-good reason, but so that we can actually lay the groundwork to have a productive conversation.
Right. And as younger people become more engaged,
yep.
What do you hope for Bridge USA's future? Like, where do you see it going?
What I hope for is more conversations like this. When we started in 2017, we were toiling away in obscurity. Nobody cared about bridging civic dialogue, civic conversations. People thought, oh, this is all a bunch of like kumbaya nonsense. It's broccoli. Like, oh, you're going to sit down and have a conversation with people you disagree with. Now people come up to us and they say, you're going to help me have a conversation with somebody I disagree with. Thank God. Like, you know, given the complexity of our political moment, given how toxic our climate is, I bring that up because I think that right now, and this is what I'll talk a little bit at the lecture tonight, I think right now we're in a battle, and the battle is between two theories of change. I think most people in our generation want change. I'm not saying that from a left or right perspective. I literally mean I think most people in our generation are disappointed by the status quo and want to see an America that's better. Conservative, liberal, doesn't matter. And so the question becomes, how do you achieve change? And I think there's two ways. The first way is the way of ideological zealotry. It's the way of protest. It's the way of I win, you lose. It's the notion that anybody that disagrees with me is fundamental evil and they must be pushed out. And the second way is the way of hope, dialogue, conversation, this notion that if you actually talk to people that are different than you, if we understand why you believe what you believe, like you were talking about with your best friend, we can actually start to create more lasting change. And I think ultimately Bridge USA's mission is to help young people see, and I think help our faculty and our college administrators and presidents see, that the way of dialogue is the way in which we ought to create change as opposed to the way of protest and conflict. And I think that's especially important on a day like today where during our lecture there will also be a faculty and student meeting about the demonstration policy, right? Israel-Palestine protests are happening across the country. People ask me, is protest a good thing? Is protest a bad thing? I think that's the wrong question. I think the real question to ask is, what is the right tool at this moment to achieve the change that you want to see? And my belief is that the right tool is the tool of conversation and dialogue. It's what I would and my friends would call the bridge mindset.
Right. So you're mentioning the bridge mindset. Could you talk a little more about mm-hmm. what the bridge mindset actually is?
Yeah. We build a bunch of bridges. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. figurative ones. You know, when we first started Bridge Cal, it's funny. When we first started it, people thought we were a civic architecture frat. And they were like, what is going on? The logo was a literal bridge. The bridge mindset is three pillars: curiosity, empathy, and constructive dialogue. All of that wrapped up into this notion that we do not have a democracy if we cannot talk to each other. So essentially what we do on a campus is we equip students with the skills and practices to be able to have these conversations. We lay out the norms for conversation. We'll give discussion guides, conversation guides. But more than that, ultimately what the bridge mindset is this idea that we have to build an identity around bridge builders. I think right now, the way that most young people think you create change is a vision of breaking down protest and conflict. We need to flip that. And the bridge mindset is an alternative. And that's what our chapters and our student leaders are doing across the country.
Okay. So almost along the same vein, I'm sure that both of us have friends and family that we have different views on. Do you have any advice, especially for younger people, on how to navigate these differences in these like pretty important relationships?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the most interesting time for Bridge USA is during Thanksgiving when everybody's going back to their family. And all I get asked is, how do you have conversations during family dinner? There's three things that I think we ought to do when it comes to disagreements with our family and within our friends. I think the first is we cannot assume that disagreement means evil. We've come too far as a society to fall into the very, I think, ideologically, frankly, dumb trap that anyone that I disagree with means that that person is not just someone that has poor views, which might be the case, but that they're fundamentally evil. When you get to the point of evil, I think you wrote in your introduction for the program that it causes this notion of affective polarization. And I think that's particularly harmful today. The second thing is to not approach the conversation with the goal of winning, but to approach the conversation with the goal of understanding. I'm not going to change your mind. I'm not going to probably change in years. If you came to a bridge dialogue and you thought that the way to achieve success in that conversation is for you to be able to change someone's mind, sorry to tell you, that's just not how human nature works. It takes much more than a 45-minute conversation to change someone's mind. What I think is more powerful is if you take that 45-minute conversation and you approach it with curiosity. I'm going to leave this conversation with a better understanding of why my mom believes differently than I do. Because then if I understand why you believe differently than I do, I can at least start to understand your experience. I can start to understand, okay, let me complicate this picture. Just because, let's say, my brother believes this view, maybe it's because of their life experience. Maybe it's because of who they came up from. And finally, the third thing that you do is we have to recognize that in our social media environment, outrage sells. Outrage is what makes you rich. It's what gets you followers, what gets you influence, and nuance goes nowhere because nuance is boring. Outrage is fun. And so what a bridge chapter does is its ultimate job is how do I create the most exciting, interesting experience for students? Forget politics. We're going to build a space where, forget the college Democrats, college Republicans, all these people. We're going to create a space where if you're a student and you're kind of unsure about politics, you're going to have a great time at our chapter. And that is how you start to build back strength.
Yeah. And so on your podcast, uh-huh. The Hopeful Majority, you have a bunch of these conversations with influential people. And just to kind of talk about toxic politics and how mm-hmm. we can offer solutions up to that. So would you be comfortable with sharing a moment that changed your perspective on something or otherwise?
So as you said, The Hopeful Majority every Monday, and I appreciate you taking time to listen to it. I think there's many actually moments where my mind or my viewpoint changed. Rather than give you an example of when my mind changed, I'll give you a point of when I felt the most challenged, because those moments of challenge I find are sometimes the most interesting ways to actually lay the groundwork for change. So last fall, when the Republican presidential primary was still happening and the Democratic primary was happening, I interviewed two different presidential candidates. One was Vivek Ramaswamy on the right, and the other was Marianne Williamson on the left. And what was so challenging about both of those conversations was that they both were so nice. You know, like they were like you and I having this conversation. Like, you know, if you saw them on social media and on TV and then you saw their persona in real life, you saw that there's a very different and frankly jarring contrast where online you see this loud yelling flamethrower person that says like this thing, that thing, you know, they're trying to get the votes. And then in person, they're open to their views being challenged. They're open to being questioned. And in that moment, what I realized was that we've built an incentive structure where if you're running for office, you're incentivized to essentially be an asshole because that's how you get votes. Remember I told you about if you ask 10 Dickinson College students, how many of them would say you should have dialogues and how many of them say you shouldn't? Mm-hmm. Those two people that you said shouldn't, those are the ones that show up in our primaries. They're the ones that vote. The way you get their votes is by saying the craziest stuff. And I don't mean crazy in a bad way. I mean, you have to play to the extremes. And so I think this is actually the hope and opportunity for a campus like Dickinson, for an organization like Bridge USA, which is we have to flip the incentive structures. If our goal is to reduce our affective polarization, to have conversations, we have to incentivize people's ability to listen to people that are different than them. And that's why at a bridge chapter, it's a really good, fun time. Because politics, most young people you ask, nobody wants to touch that thing. It's kind of crazy. It's a little toxic. So that's our objective and goal. And that was a really challenging moment during the podcast.
Right. So for a concluding question, what is, with the election coming up in, a month from now?
Yeah.
What is the most important thing you would say for younger voters or first-time voters to keep in mind as they make their decision?
I think everybody should go vote, but I think there's two things that young people should realize at this time. I think the first thing to realize is that politics is theater. And politics is theater specifically meant to gin up outrage. The currency that sells in politics is outrage. You as a political leader, the biggest thing I've learned talking to political leaders, presidential candidates, former presidents, you name it, is that ultimately they're incentivized not to be bipartisan and solve your problems. They're incentivized to run on problems. If there's a problem out there, they want that problem to exist because it's easy to run on that problem. It's easy to say, you know, we've got an open border. It's easy to say, if you're on the left, that people are after your identity. It's hard to say, here's how I'm going to solve the problem. So if young people realize that the way that the current structure is set up is meant to incentivize outrage, they should not let the outrage of their politicians translate to outrage for each other. Just because our leaders tell us that people that we disagree with are fundamentally evil does not mean that's true. And the second thing that I think young people should realize as they go and vote on the polls is to understand that history is really long. Everyone thinks that on November 4th, the country is either going to survive or end, depending on where you stand on the political aisle. I'm here to tell you that the American experiment, Zupa, I was just doing some Googling a couple weeks ago, so I was giving a lecture and a talk on like the historical perspective of the United States, is 250 years old. Now, to someone like you or I, that feels like a long time. When you contextualize in context of empires and history, the Roman Empire, 1,800 years old. The Chinese Empire, 1,500 years old. The Athenian democracy, 450 years old. The American experiment is not at the end of its journey. It's at the beginning. We're in maybe chapter 2 or 3. The reason why I articulate that is because when young people vote and get active out of fear instead of hope, that engagement is much more cynical. It's much more pessimistic. And we cannot have pessimism because pessimism leads to nihilism. And democracy dies when the average everyday person gives up on the notion of change.
All right. So for everybody that's listening, you can catch the lecture that's coming up tonight on clarkforum.org, or if you're here on campus, you could go to Anita Tubin Schlechter Auditorium at 7 p.m. today. And once again, on behalf of the Clark Forum, thank you for being here and just sharing your opinions and voice with us.
Yeah, thanks for hosting me, and let's get a Bridge USA chapter started, Dickinson.
Yeah, I think we could definitely make that start.
We'll make it happen.